Okay, thank you, Joanna. Thank you, everybody. Last session, and absolutely we are staying on the theme of the last 2 days of better communications, as I'm directly asking for your advice about communications. So the background to this session and the material we sent you beforehand is that over the last few years, as you're probably aware, I hope you're aware, from your own discussions about the Foundation's strategic priorities, about the work plan, the board, together with the Interpretations Committee, has been much more active in supporting the implementation and application of IFRS standards than was previously the case. And it's an area where we've consciously been focusing on and improving and developing. And I think it's one for which we did receive positive feedback that we should be going in this direction in the recent consultation exercises. And I'd like to think that you will have noticed the difference in practice as well. However, we are aware that from recent discussions we've been having with people and consultations that sometimes the communication about these activities has perhaps lagged behind, and it's clear that many are unaware of what we're doing to support the standards and also where to find information as well. So that's really why we're seeking your advice this afternoon. So I'll just spend, Patrina and I will just spend a few more minutes just providing a little bit more context about the work that the board and the Interpretations Committee are doing, and then we will hand over to you for discussion. So moving on to the next slide. This is just a slide I always put up whenever we're talking about implementation and application support, because it's just an important reminder, really, and it's just highlighting this delicate balance that we have to tread as the standard setter between being, on the one hand, helpful and responsive, as many ask us to be, to our stakeholders, so providing the appropriate amount of support for people applying the standards. But on the other hand, we want to preserve the principle-based nature of IFRS standards and not to disrupt practice. And in particular, something I think we feel very strongly about is we don't want to stop the use of good judgment by people in applying the standards. And I think it's probably fair to say that a majority of people think we've got that balance about right. Obviously, some think we should be doing more and some think we do too much. So it's just this balancing act. So with that in mind, what I'd first like to do too is turn to some of the activities supporting the new standards, and then we'll look at the activities supporting the standards that are already effective. So turning to new standards first of all, I think this is the area where we've particularly developed in the last few years. If I think back a few years ago, we set the standard, we issued the standard, and then I don't think we quite forgot, but we certainly sat back and waited for questions to come in to the Interpretations Committee. But what we've been trying to do with the newer standards, so financial instruments, revenue recognition and leases, is really just be more active in supporting those standards before they become effective. And of course, as you know from discussion we had at the last council meeting, we're planning activities to support the new insurance contract standard as well. And we're basically doing this because we want to get the standards off to a good start to improve the quality and consistency of their application. And we think that by being more active in these early days, we can really help stakeholders get a more consistent understanding of what the requirements are, what they're shooting for when they're applying the standard. And also we think that our activities at this point, before the standard becomes effective, are effectively less disruptive than interventions at the later stage as well. So on the slide, you've got the various activities. I'm sure some of these you'll be familiar with, as we've spoken about some of them specifically, but just sort of pull them together here. So the transition resource groups. On leases, of course, we didn't have a transition resource group, but we used a series of educational webcasts. And we kind of tried to use the webcasts in a very responsive way. We've tried to use them also when we're aware of perhaps some questions arising in practice. We did it last summer. I think it was last summer. Sue and Kumar on the FI team did a webcast to address some specific issues on the financial instrument standard. And last week, we just posted a new webcast on the LISA standard, again, just dealing with some questions we'd heard about modifications. Obviously, published various articles, and we have had board and committee discussions as well on the new standards. And, of course, ultimately, if we feel there is a need to, we have undertaken some standard setting after very carefully considering the cost-benefit trade-off of intervening at an early stage in supporting a new standard. And then just on slide six, we just gave you sort of snapshots from the existing website where the resources are available. And, you know, as Ben was explaining yesterday, actually trying to make these resources more attractive, more accessible, more visible is a key part of the new website as well. So we're really hoping for improvement here with the new website. So I'm now going to hand over to Petrina for dealing with the standards that are already effective.
Thank you, Henry, and good afternoon. So in really then providing support for standards that are already effective, first of all, we do work closely with regulators and with the national standard setters really to try and support them in the important role that they play in fostering consistent application. But also a lot of then the support that we directly provide for those standards that are already effective is really mainly done by the Interpretations Committee. So the committee's process is really designed to allow any stakeholder to submit a question to the committee via our website. It's fully open and transparent, so all of those submissions get considered in public meetings, and the committee then follows the process in the due process handbook, of course, to decide whether to add a standard setting project to its agenda to address the question asked. So if the committee decides to add a standard setting project to the agenda, then that project can result in, it can take a number of different forms. So it can result in either an interpretation that more adds to existing requirements, or it could result in a narrow scope amendment to the standards. And as part of the slide deck on slide 16, we did include some statistics about the committee's activities in 2016. And what those statistics show is that of the 33 topics discussed by the committee in 2016, then 9 of those have or will result in some form of standard setting and the various forms that you see on the slide. If, however, having considered the criteria in the due process handbook, the committee decides that it isn't necessary to amend the standards or it's not appropriate to do so, then it doesn't actually mean that it does nothing. It actually publishes an agenda decision. Now, we're aware that there may be a perception that unless the committee decides to undertake standard setting or possibly even narrower, unless it actually issues an interpretation, then there perhaps is a perception that it isn't being responsive. And I suppose we're now aware that this is also not helped by the fact that on our website we do refer to these agenda decisions as issues rejected. So one thing we're very aware, I think, is that we need to improve sort of, you know, communicating that the committee actually helps in many instances by publishing sort of informative or educative agenda decisions, which in fact answer the question asked or provide explanatory information about which requirements to apply in answering the question. So again, on slide 21 specifically, again it shows of the topics discussed in 2016, 16 agenda decisions resulted that include the sort of explanatory and informative material that set out how to apply the relevant principles and requirements in the standards. And I think in the context of having principle-based standards, we think this is really a very important role for the committee. So these informative agenda decisions are a useful tool And trying to achieve that balance that Henry talked about between being responsive and yet preserving the principle-based nature of the standards. And I think at least feedback would tell us that many would actually object if we were to address all questions asked through actual standard setting and changing the standards. So we do realise we need to do more to explain both the work of the committee and also more to make these informative agenda decisions actually more visible to people. Which, of course, leads us on to the question that we've got on the table for you. In slides 12 to 14, we note various improvements that we've sort of identified and discussed with the trustees about how we support the standards. I'm going to move quickly past slides 12 and 13 that are really there for your information, and go directly to slide 14, which is really the focus of today's discussion. So on slide 14, we've really noted three main areas in terms of where we think we might improve our communications. The first is just communicating about the overall activities undertaken by the board or the committee in supporting implementation and application. The second is to really explain both the committee's process and the work it does, and also to try and get greater visibility of these informative or educative agenda decisions. And the third area is really to say that we want to formalise the board's consideration of issues where it's concluded that it's too broad to address, or where the committee has concluded that the issue is perhaps too broad to address as a narrow scope project. And really there to hopefully better communicate why something isn't added to the work plan if that's the conclusion of the board. So maybe with that, I will say that we're very keen to hear from you and hear if you've got any specific suggestions then under the theme of communication about how we might best achieve this sort of desired improvement in how we communicate about everything that's going on.
Thank you, Petrina and Henry. And I'm going to throw out, Matt's still in the room, isn't he? A provocative challenge or thought to think about. And it's interesting, Petrina, because you talked about giving informative and educative information in relation to the agenda decisions. And it was raised in the education initiative, where does education start and where does, if you like, guidance or interpretation finish? And I'm just wondering whether, and it comes back to better communication, does it really matter? And what we are trying to do is to get people to apply consistently in the broadest sense of the word, that they understand what we mean. And does that matter whether it comes from an interpretation, a standard, a blog, or education material? And therefore, are we better simply to be transparent, explain our transparency, and communicate better about the fact that there is a scale of material that we have, and this is, and I was trying to think of the right word, you know, this is the waterfall, but that's not the right word, of the different things that we have, and explain that and say it's blurry lines, but it all mixes together. So that's my provocative thought listening to you, and particularly because you used the word educative.
If it's helpful, sorry, and Sue, just to let you know that, first of all, say we're not necessarily wedded to that word at any level, and to explain the background to it is simply that I suppose if I show you this slide, the slide 16 that I referred to, it is a lot of that perception issue I talked about seems to be, and as I say, really not helped by us, and that we put it under an umbrella called issues rejected. But I think it was very much saying that often when people look at the work of the committee, quite rightly on the face of it, they think, well, oh, there were 21 issues of the 33 discussed that they rejected, and they said no to me. And almost in a sense, all we were trying to do with that adjective, which could be something different, is say, well, we think it might be helpful if we were able to segregate those agenda decisions that actually have quite a lot of information in there to help people sort of work out how to apply the standard versus those that don't.
And I'm supporting that, and I'm not being critical of you using the word educative. However, I think that, and I don't know how much you guys and Matt talk around, you know, how you do that. But it is, well, maybe there could be more. So that's just my provocative. Sue, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, because one of the discussions is how much goes in the Green Book, for example. But on your waterfall, I think there's a couple of different things going on. I agree with you, the lines are a bit blurry, but I think one of the key differences we focus on is what's authoritative versus what's not authoritative. But I think another thing that we're very conscious of is the different levels of due process. So something that's gone through the Interpretations Committee, even if it's an educative agenda decision, has been put out for comment, whereas if we come up with some example purely from an education perspective, there's a lighter touch from a due process perspective.
I still leave the challenge, though, as to whether or
just
not... as to how we consider it. Having said that, that was my getting my tuppence worth in at the beginning because I'm in control. I'm the only one who can freely speak in this meeting. It's wonderful. Roxana.
Thank you very much. I think this topic is very important, particularly because now a consistent application has become more at the forefront of the ISB agenda once the big projects have been finished. And actually, it's quite interesting, some of the ideas which are put in here. I think I would probably like to understand a little bit more in terms of what is the ISB intention in working with the national standard setters. And I'm going to explain why I'm asking this question, and I will make the caveat because I'm only speaking about Europe, but in the European context, I think we gave up on our power to do whatever, so as we say, we take the ISB standards on board, and there is an endorsement process which is done afterwards. And I think now I can understand that it's very useful to get information from the national standard setter. I can see the point of going through educational process, but I don't know where that stops, and I think in one of the slides here is mentioned something like the local guidance. And I think as regulators, because at the end of the process that will come back to us, I think my members will think about, wow, if we start to have national guidance on like interpretation of IFRS, is this a step forward? While I think in the past we struggled to have one single set of standards at international level, and probably the idea for us, and I know that also we have been quite critical in the past about the interpretation committee saying that more issues shall be brought to the agenda, and I think I saw an improvement in there probably last year. But probably I think I just expressed some concerns of relation to the risk of proliferation of national variation of IFRSs.
Henry, you?
Thank you, Roxana. I mean, just what are we trying to do by working with the national standard setters? I think the way I look at it is to say, look, they're a key partner, really, in this work of supporting consistent application because they're so often on the front line with their own stakeholders. So we just thought that there is more that we should and could be doing with them to support them. And so, you know, that could be, for example, about if a national standard set has got some, is dealing with some questions from a stakeholder about a new standard, that we could have some dialogue with them to talk to them about the standard so that they're better informed before they themselves have their discussion with the with their own stakeholders. So it's just because, to some degree, they're an extension of us that we think working with them is important. But that can go, obviously, I was sort of thinking they're very informal. But, I mean, I think this could go a little bit further and to say that I think in certain cases a national standard setter might want to provide a little bit more help on a particular issue in their jurisdiction in terms of how IFRS standards apply to that particular transaction. And so, you know, we're aware of situations and actually encouraged to be involved in these situations whereby they have wanted to develop some educational material to support their stakeholders in a particular jurisdiction about, you know, an issue that is of prominence in that jurisdiction. So, for example, there's been some questions about how does a new revenue standard apply to real estate, retail real estate transactions. And effectively, you know, 1NS took the approach of developing a series of articles which just tried to put the broader revenue standard and apply it more narrowly to the particular type of transaction and contract that they would see in their jurisdiction. And so by working with them, we can ensure that is effectively is a consistent reading of the standard and is applying the principles and requirements of the standard. Now, that might go a little bit more formal, but if a standard setter wants to produce local guidance, I think it's in all of our interests that we work with them to ensure that it is applying the principles of IFRS to the particular transaction.
Still, that doesn't remove our concern because that will not be authoritative guidelines. So I think I would just like to warn you that might create some problems in enforcement later on.
And I think, I think we would first encourage, is there a way of doing it via what you might label more educational material. But we actually have this laid out in our protocol with the IFAS, actually, about this whole question about where a national standard setter feels there's a need for a more specific guidance for a particular issue in their jurisdiction.
Jens.
Thank you, Joanna. I really appreciate the idea of pulling together material that relates to revenue standard, to leases standard. I think this is a very helpful act and is an example of better communication. Then I do have some questions or remarks on the work of the interpretation committee. I do think that labeling the decisions as agenda decisions rather than as agenda rejections is very helpful. I have a plea. We struggle a little bit with the adjective educative. I think informative is a much better suited for the purpose. Just to explain to you, from an auditor's perspective, there's always a thin line whether we talk about a change in an accounting policy or erroneous accounting, and the adjective educative for a matter that where is diversity in practice, and you come up and this is education, this might be read that you got it wrong in the first instance, and educative always brings you on the path of, or it's more on the path of an error correction rather than change in accounting policy. And honestly speaking, change in accounting policy sells much better than an error correction. And then I have a recommendation on, I think it's in the light of what can you do better on communications, looking back on the work of the interpretation committee under the former chairman, there were less interpretation activity. So we recognize that standard setting was the primary objective, and the interpretation committee did not produce so many results. We highly appreciate that now the interpretation committee comes up with more agenda decisions. But it's difficult to track all these agenda decisions, and we do think that from an auditor's perspective, we would encourage that there's a new product for the IASB, and we would encourage to think about a 6-monthly publication of your agenda decisions. This could be even make much more trustworthy or worthwhile when you put worked examples into it. So you have all the worked examples in the staff paper. It's just a way of pulling out information you have in the staff papers like a worked example and put it together with the agenda decision. And I think this would be a sellable product for you. I think that's it for what I suggest. But I do think the 6-monthly publication. Oh, there's one note on the comment that Sue made on the green book. We struggle a little bit with. Now you have 3 books. You have the blue book, the red book, and the green book. The green book is something more than the red book. However, where is the some more to the blue book? Because when you see agenda decisions that are applicable, to, let's say, to IAS 17, where can I find them right now? I'm not able to. We do have them all in our information bases, but for the preparers or the users, agenda decisions relating to IAS 17 are not available anymore. So perhaps you need to think about not only what should go into the green book, but also is there a yellow book that compares to the blue book. So but if you do these color games, because it's blue, red, green, and there's something missing because there's nothing that adds to the blue book.
I see more opportunities for self-generated income here. Lots of rejections and a nice little book.
But actually, it's a good point, and I think that's behind some of what Elizabeth and Matt were explaining in terms of plans for the Green Book is to address the fact that agenda decisions disappear too soon.
Jake.
Thank you. Just a couple of points. One is on those issues where the committee say the project is too broad or the issue is too broad and it needs to be dealt with by the board, I wonder if there is more that could be said in answering those that would be helpful for preparers and investors. Primarily, I'm thinking the disclosures already required by IAS 1. When there's choices of accounting policies, you actually have to disclose what those are. I wonder if in some of those situations there may actually be further disclosures that the committee feel are necessary in order for the financial statements to give a fair presentation as well. So on occasion, I think those get, the phrase I've heard is knocked into the long grass, but that could be done in a way that helps to shed light on actually some of the divergent practices that exist. That's the first point I wanted to make. The second one was, if we are going to have educative, authoritative, non-authoritative, I would like to limit the number of different adjectives used to describe this different information, because that just raises the question in the preparers' minds and the auditors' minds, which of these do I have to follow? And that is often complicated by the fact that regulators take slightly different views depending on which jurisdiction they come from. So the more of these adjectives that you create, the more complexity I think you build into the system.
Okay, thank you, Jake. James.
Thank you, Joanna. I think my first point has been picked up by a lot of the responses so far. In this presentation, we had interpretation, implementation, application, educative. I think we just got too many adjectives at the moment. What is part of the standard? What isn't part of the standard, I think, is a clear line that has to be drawn. Sue, you refer to authoritative, non-authoritative. Maybe that's the line, but we need to draw that very precisely, I think. Agenda rejections, I agree with Petrina. We want to get rid of that word. They're now fondly referred to as NIFRICs in South Africa, which is far softer, rather than a rejection. But maybe, and Jens referred to it, maybe there's a greater role for the Interpretation Committee now that we've got through the major standards, or about to get through the major standards, in providing more interpretive assistance, if you want, in creating this global single set of standards. And I think maybe the national standard setters can play a role here, bringing issues to the Interpretations Committee. In the slides, the process is that anyone is allowed to submit. And I think that's rather reactive. I mean, the challenge I'm putting out is, should we be more proactive to get issues that need consideration at this level?
And Linda.
Yeah, I don't know how much more I can add here, probably confuse it a little bit more, but I do realize we've got way too many words. And from my perspective, it does worry me when we have local standard setters setting standards coming from a global organization. That creates a lot of difficulties and confusion, because we want one global standard. I get the issue that it's hard to get consistency in practice, but I think we need to define what does consistency really mean, because if we want real consistency, we're getting to rules-based accounting, and I don't think that's what we want. So there always does have to be a little room. What role does the accounting standard setters play in that? What role does the audit firms play in that? I think from my perspective as a preparer, the audit firms actually have a much more in-depth understanding of some of the real issues because they're closer to us in facing those issues. We can both play a role, preparers and audit firms, in explaining that to the local accounting standards board in order to filter it appropriately for the IASB. But I think that filtering process and everyone's role in that needs to be clear. But I don't think we're ever going to get, hopefully never rules-based accounting and different interpretations globally.
Mary.
Prompted a bit by Jake's comment, just wanted to maybe make a connection with something that came out of the agenda consultation. When Hans gave his update yesterday, I think he highlighted the message that we'd received about a more focused agenda and finishing things sooner. And I think I'm going to look at Henry and Petrina as I say this in terms of impact on the interpretation committee. But I think it means that if you look 5 or 6 years ago and a question comes in, does it relate to a project on the board's active agenda? If the board had 6 major standard-setting projects, it was much more likely to have that kind of interaction. And I think now, as we have a more focused agenda at the active standard-setting, we have a better, I think, clearer thinking about a more focused research agenda, and, you know, what's being done actively versus what is dormant, you know, the research pipeline. What I hope we find is that fewer things are questions that come that cross over the board's active standard setting agenda. So that just may take one source of some of the volume of should the interpretation committee be working on something in parallel with the board or not, and usually the decision was not. So that might just reduce that pool of issues a bit.
I'd agree with what Mary just said, and also just a quick response to the comment that Jake made, because I think what we're trying to do now, and again I'm looking at Petrina and Henry as I say this as well, is even if it's something that we think is too broad for the committee to look at, I think the test we're setting, the staff are setting themselves, and that we're then sort of, me as chair, is putting to the committee is, even if that's the case, have we done everything we can possibly do to be helpful today? So if there's 4 different alternative approaches we know people are using and we know one just as a non-starter, say that if we can. If there's disclosures that are relevant, point those out. If there's something they should be thinking about when they're thinking about what the policy choice should be, what factors would you consider, and trying to just sort of hum as many bars as we can, even if we can't give a black and white definitive response, so that we hope that, I think, everything we issue now has at least some bit of information in it. That's our objective.
I think that's all the comments. No. One more. Go on.
It's just a small comment, really, and it goes to the too broad for the committee to consider and considered by the board. I just hope that we actually have some sort of annual or biannual actually revisit of that, because sometimes in the past when these things have been put in that bucket, it's something we've never seen again. So, you know, just sometimes these are the really big issues, and it'd be good to have some sort of ongoing feedback as to where that actually was in the pipeline.
Katrina, do you want to comment?
Yeah, just on that point, Stephen, it was something that we, actually committee members asked us to do, and actually given that the board had, you know, obviously relatively recently discussed its agenda and come up with its work plan, actually just at the March Interpretations Committee meeting, there was a paper prepared for the committee that went through all of the issues for the last, since 2012 until 2016, where the committee had concluded it was too broad and they'd gone to the board, and that paper then summarises what has happened to those, which projects are they being addressed, you know, have they already been addressed, which projects are they now part of, etc. So if anybody's interested in that, it is one of the, I think it's agenda paper 13 or 14 for the March Interpretations Committee meeting.
I think that is the final comments, and just looking at my notes as to what I've pulled out of those comments, I think generally there is absolutely no doubt that the Advisory Council is supportive of more and better communication in this area. There is absolutely, Joanna got completely and utterly overruled in terms of her provocative comment, in terms of the fact that too many adjectives, and I'm saying it's a scale and it really doesn't matter, and nobody else seems to agree with that, so that's fine, that there is a concern expressed re local interpretation, so we just need to be conscious of that and how we can communicate better about what you're doing around that, I think. So it's coming back to that. Absolute supportive of the agenda decision terminology change from rejections. And perhaps in terms of, and I think there was only one answer in terms of what we can do better, support perhaps that the committee comes up with more decisions and that there is a 6-monthly publication that maybe summarises those, including worked examples that Jen's suggestion from the staff paper. And clearly to explain the decisions better. So whether it's broad decisions or what we're doing to make sure that it is, if not educative, informative and useful to help users around those things. And they're the key messages that I got out of that session. Is there anything extra, Henry or Petrina, you want to raise on that?
No, that exactly lined up with mine. I only just noted one other comment, which I think Jens had, was to say that I think it was helpful to bring all of the material we have together by standard. So if there's everything we have in IFRS 15.
Yep. Okay. Well, in which case, if there are no further comments, I might thank Henry and Petrina for that. And believe it or not, we are now only 3 minutes behind our agenda. So well done, council stroke staff presenters.